Hi everyone, welcome to the Suffolk Babies podcast. In today's podcast, we're going to be talking all about separation anxiety. It's a term that's widely used by parents when our children display signs of clinginess or upset when they're apart from us, or indeed from our partners or anyone else who they are close to. And it's a very normal stage of development. But actually, it is a term that is sometimes widely misunderstood, isn't it, Jo?
Absolutely. There's a few things actually that play factors in this, Mel, because I think sometimes we automatically negatively look at separation anxiety and think it to be a bad thing. And we also confuse separation anxiety with the development of object permanence, which is a separate issue. So it's quite a complex topic, really.
And I think certainly with having two children of different ages, but who are both displaying signs of separation anxiety, it's something that I can definitely relate to. But I think we always sort of look for a label for things, don't we, when we're going through periods, challenging periods of parenthood, and separation anxiety is one of those labels that we use so very regularly. It is very normal, isn't it? Because actually it is a developmental stage where they are understanding the world around them a little bit more and understanding that they are reliant on you as their primary caregiver. And therefore, why would they want to be away from you?
That is the thing. I think that it's all about what we deem to be, you know, positive character traits in the modern world, isn't it? We all want to be, you know, that bright, brash, confident person who's sort of going out there and you know, kind of like living life. And we want to see that in our children because we want them to be successful and we want the best for them. And we, and so we want to encourage them to be super, super independent. But actually, it's completely natural. It's an evolutionary part of childhood that children are going to want to be with their primary caregiver. You are their safe place. You are the key to their survival in really basic terms. You know, you're their source of warmth and comfort and nourishment, and you're the center of their world. So of course they are going to want to be with you over anybody else.
From an age point of view, separation anxiety, like most things with children, is very specific to each child, isn't it? It's very individual. But would you say, Jo, there are general periods in our child's lives where it's more likely to be prevalent, perhaps?
Yeah, it's a tricky one because, like you said, it is going to be different from each child. It's crucially linked to your baby's sensory integration and how much they're interacting in a sensory sense with their wider environment. So your baby at birth really, you know, needs that adult body to regulate their basic physiological systems. It doesn't really matter which, they'd rather have mummy because they can smell the milk and they're used to the sound of her heartbeat and her breathing and everything. So mummy is probably going to trump everybody else around them, no matter how well they know those other adults in their world. They'll probably still want mummy more than anything else because they are still basically a part of her body at that point for those fourth trimester months. So up until about 3-4 months. Around 4 months, as we all know, we hit this 4-month spurt of development, which plays havoc with our baby's sleep. And that's when they really develop more of an understanding about their wider environments. But at this age, and they will appear to be clingy. And so it's very easy for us at 4 months to turn around and go, oh, it's separation anxiety. It's the beginning of separation. And yeah, there is an element of that, absolutely. Because they're beginning to, you know, favour their key primary caregivers over everybody else. But the bigger thing that is happening to them at that point in development is the understanding of object permanence. So our 4-month-old baby doesn't understand that you still exist in the world if they can't see you. So you'll probably notice with babies between 4 and 6 months, even if you're just standing behind the car seat, you know, just out of their line of vision, it doesn't, you know, haven't even left the room, or you're in the shower, you know, you've had the audacity to get in the shower and leave them sitting in their chair. They can't see you for a second and they erupt and they cry and they are apparently terrified. And that's because if the minute that you're out of their line of vision, they think that you've disappeared and you've left, you know, they've been left on their own and they're in danger. They don't have any object permanence, any idea of the fact that you still exist when you're out of sight. You can help with that by talking to your baby so that they become more anchored to your voice. So even if they can't see you, they're comforted by the sound of your voice. And like, that's why, isn't it, Mel, that we say, talk to your baby from birth, get them anchored to the sound of your voice, get them tracking your voice, get them tracking you through their sense of hearing just as much as through their sense of vision. And that should hopefully help with the object permanence element of this as well.
This idea of separation anxiety, though, is when actually you do actually leave, like you're not.
Yeah, when you might start leaving them with somebody else. So, and this is commonly, I mean, like you will see it from the word go, because they'd always rather be with number one person, mummy or daddy. But the most common time when we see this is between 6 and 8 months. And I think that is kind of pretty much linked with the fact that's the time when a lot of mums go back to work. So it's the time when we start settling in nurseries and or with other family members who are going to provide that care during the day when we're not there. And so that's when it becomes a real issue. So it's not that it hasn't existed before, it's that it becomes an issue for us when we want to be able to leave our babies with other people. And when we're not going to be, you know, their primary person for an extended period of time per day. And 8 months as well, you've got 6 to 8 months as well, you've got massive spurt of development going on. They're also often teething. They're going through another sleep regression and a massive spurt of development in terms of their mobility. And, you know, we're leaving them more. So they're eating a wider range of foods. So actually, do you know what? Their world is being turned upside down at this age. You know, 8 to 10 months, when you really see separation anxiety coming to the fore, the infant world is absolutely chaotic. So it's not surprising they cling even more tightly to us. And I think that's what we really struggle with, because our 8 to 10 month old baby we view as being pretty grown up, and we want them, you know, just be a bit more independent, don't we? You know, a bit more self-sufficient.
But what we need to remember as well about separation anxiety is actually a good thing, isn't it? Because it's a really good sign of attachment.
Yeah, I mean, this is the really tricky thing. You can't have a well-attached child without separation anxiety. The two come hand in hand. So attachment and bonding, you know, that attachment, your baby's desire to be with you and knowing that you're their safe place, and the bond, the love and care that you provide for your baby and that you feel for your baby. You know, if you're going to have those things, you're going to experience separation anxiety, because you're not there to bring your fit. From our point of view, we forget about the parental aspect of this as well, don't we, Mel?
Yeah, you know, we cover too. Probably worse than the children, actually.
We really do. We really do. And that's a really great sign that you've got a fantastic bond with your baby, and you should celebrate the anxiety, really, I think. You know, if you're kind of always thinking about them and everything, it shows how tightly bonded you are. And if your baby would always rather be with you, I mean, what a fantastic, secure place to be, knowing that, you know, mummy kind of is utterly responsive to you. And it's always going to meet your needs. And to have that level of trust between two individuals is incredibly special. So, yeah, maybe it can't be replicated by everybody who cares for your child, but you can ensure that your child also has a really great bond with the other people that they spend time with. And I think that is the key to managing separation anxiety. You know, we can't cure it. It's another one of those things with infancy. You can't cure all of these traits of infancy. We can only understand them and almost manage them. And separation anxiety is another one of those. So we can't stop it happening, but we can increase the bond with the people who are looking after your child when you are not there, and therefore reduce the impact of the separation anxiety.
We can help to try and manage it, and we can help ourselves and our children try and manage it, can't we? Which we will go on to talk about some top tips in a moment. But I just wanted to go through as well, again, having two children of different ages, both going through separation anxiety. I think it's really interesting just to talk through the fact that separation anxiety doesn't just happen between a certain period of time in your child's life and then stop, does it? I mean, they could display signs of separation anxiety between 8 and 10 months. But then again, when they're going through another change, like going to a different nursery or going up in a class in nursery at like 2 to 3 years of age as well, can't they?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's going to be something that is more prevalent at different times, normally, because there are massive changes going on in their lives. So if you think about, you know, just things like a change, if we start a new job, we become more anxious. we're likely to cling to the things that are more familiar to us. So for our children, starting a new nursery or starting, you know, a kind of with a new childminder is going to make separation anxiety more intense. For our children, having a massive spurt of neural pathway development, learning to walk, likely to make separation anxiety more intense. You know, it's all of going on holiday, things that we look on as being really, really pleasurable. If they're in a strange, funny, foreign environment, what are they going to do? Cling to their normality. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's going to make separation anxiety more intense.
It may be that you don't find that your baby displays signs of separation anxiety in early infancy, you know, around that 8 to 10 months. They just might not. Or maybe you haven't had to put them in a situation where either of you have had to go through that. So some children, some toddlers do skip separation anxiety in infancy, don't they? But you may start to demonstrate challenges at like 15 or 18 months of age.
Yeah, I don't think we can make it age specific, Mel. I think it's more environmental than age based, because I think that, you know, the level of separation anxiety your child experiences is going to be because of outside factors. So I think about, you know, my eldest child who didn't really experience separation anxiety after we settled him in nursery, you know, for the first time, 6 to 8, he started nursery 6 to 8 months. I worked in the nursery with him. And so it was a familiar environment. It was somewhere that we went every day. It was a part of our routine. He knew all the people who were looking after him because they were my colleagues and he had known them forever. So yeah, to begin with, when I wasn't his primary person all the time, really, really tough. But he very soon accepted this change. It was just part of our life. And so he then didn't go through the typical, you know, a lot of people talk about typical toddler separation anxiety, don't they? At 2.5, when you have that big sleep regression as well. Mm. My eldest son didn't ever experience that because it was just the norm for him. Absolutely, yeah. Totally safe and secure. Knew the environment. It wasn't a big deal. We didn't experience that clinginess at that age at all. It was very different from my youngest child, who did a nursery change at that point because he was no longer, he changed to a nursery that catered better for toddlers and could do an awful lot more with him. And it was a really, really difficult time to settle him. He wasn't happy at all. On reflection, I probably should have left him in the environment where he felt so safe and secure, where he'd been from a younger age. So I think it's nothing to do with age. I think it is to do with environment.
Yeah, and circumstance. Yeah.
I think that's also what's really, really tough for a lot of parents. If you're like, and this will happen over Christmas if we're allowed to travel, won't it? Mm-hmm. Where we all go and stay with grandparents or people that we maybe haven't seen very much at all this year. And you will find that your child is ultra clingy to you. And that is because they're in a strange environment with adults that they haven't seen for a prolonged period of time. It's going to be really difficult on the adults because, you know, the grandparents who've been separated from their grandchildren are going to want to do and want to help and want to interact with the grandchildren, but they're going to find it very difficult to do so because the grandchild is probably going to say, no, I want to be with my familiar people where I'm super, super attached. So we're going to see this. I think a lot of people are going to experience separation anxiety kind of maybe more at the moment as a result of our lockdown as well. So I think it's a really important thing to understand. And it's something that you can't treat by forcing that separation. In fact, the more you reassure your child and the more reactive you are to your child, the more, you know, you kind of accept that it's just a part of life at this age, the more likely they are to feel safe and secure and to go off and interact with those other people that you want them to interact with.
In terms of top tips to help our children and us deal with separation anxiety, there are a few, I think, that that we should consider or that people can consider. And a lot of it, as we've talked so much in the past, is about routine, because we know that children like routines. The same things, you know, knowing what to expect, etc., can all really help with helping to deal and cope with separation anxiety, can't it?
Yeah, it's the predictability element of it. Remember, separation anxiety is motivated by people feeling insecure by a changing environment. So children can't mark time. So there's no point telling them that at 9 o'clock we're going to go to school or we're going to go to nursery. So, you know, that's absolutely irrelevant. What they do judge their day by and understand, you know, have some understanding of what's coming next is repetitive actions. So you're absolutely right, Mel. It's about having the same set of repetitive actions before you go somewhere. So they're like, right, now we're going here, now we're doing this, this is when you're going to come back. So it's also important that the setting that they're going to has quite structured actions for during the day as well. So they know that once they've got maybe, you know, had a bit of afternoon play outside in the garden, had their snack in the afternoon, they know that the next thing that happens is that mummy comes to collect them. And that is the kind of way a child will be able to make sense of the passing of the day.
Definitely. As you said, Jo, that children don't have a concept of time, but you can always frame your references of when you'll return with specifics that your child can understand, like I'll be back before afternoon snack time, or you'll have a nap at X, Y, and Z, and then I'll be back after that, or I'm going to drop you off after breakfast and be back before lunch, for example.
And I think that the earlier we get into the habit of sort of commentating on our day, the better, because as your child gets older, it's going to be a really useful tool. And children understand language and respond to, you know, language way earlier than we can imagine. I think kind of even before the first year, they really understand the bulk of what you're saying to them if you've been talking to them from birth. So, you know, it's a case of absolutely commentate on the day, talk about what's happening next, and you can't repeat that enough. I completely agree, Mel. I think chatting them through what's happening next is a really good strategy.
We know if you can provide a bit of a trial or a tester for the environment or for being away from you as the primary caregiver, that can help. So some short practice sessions, for want of a better expression, like getting them used to being with someone else in a secure environment with a different person, can actually help make the big transition a lot easier. I think certainly with us that helped as well, just having someone, obviously difficult with COVID too, but you know, as we talked last time, we can have our support bubbles, so do make sure you are using that capability to have someone else in formal childcare. It gives you a really good opportunity to have someone else just to come in for an hour, half an hour even, just to come and give your children another person to play with, to like just get to feel secure with as well. And that can help with the bigger transition, can't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's about, and I think also it's about picking the right place that your child's going to, isn't it, Mel? Yeah. I think you have to absolutely, you know, trust where they're going, the person or the environment that they're going to. One of the biggest things I listen to with a lot of mums on a regular basis is the fact that they're not entirely happy with the setting that they've chosen to use, you know, or the person they've chosen to use. And I think this is particularly difficult if you're reliant on a family member. Mm-hmm. And we know what it's like, particularly with, you know, our own mothers or our mothers-in-law, where maybe they've got very different parenting ideals to what we have. And so you need to know that whoever you're leaving your child with is going to parent kind of the same way. Yeah. And so that you feel safe and secure, so you're not worrying that things are going to be done differently or in something that's going to conflict with your own parenting ideas. So you need to have that compatibility.
The other thing that I found really useful and actually a bit of fun as well was to come up with sort of a quick goodbye ritual, a little secret high five handshake or something that's individual to you and your child that can make it fun, but again, add a sense of routine and consistency to the drop off.
I think that's a really good idea, but you're right. Make sure it's short and to the point so that you can always do it. So even if, you know, the time pressure is there, you're able to finish that ritual routine, because you could almost by default create another issue if it's a really long-winded, intricate kind of, it's a bit like bedtime, isn't it? You know, when it goes from one story to two stories to seven stories and suddenly, you know, bedtime is taking you 3 hours and it's a nightmare.
And also to be consistent. So we've talked about, you know, routine or doing things in the same way every time you have to leave your child. But I think consistency really is key, isn't it? Just to make sure that they know and they can anticipate what's coming next. A routine can really help diminish the heartache, I guess, that will allow you and your child simultaneously to build trust in that independence that they're going to gain.
Yeah, definitely, because the whole thing is reinforcing that, you know, yep, mummy may leave me, but I'm staying with somebody I trust and I like and I love, and then mummy will always come back, and if it is always reliable, and that gives you know this, it's safe, there's lots and lots of safety in that situation, isn't there? Mummy's always going to do what she says she's going to do, and that again is the foundation stone of this wider relationship that's going to develop develop over the next, you know, 20 years with your child. And I think that is the other thing that we focus on, don't we? I know we've had this chat as well, that we kind of always focus on those one isolated incidences where it all goes wrong, don't we? And go, oh God, drop off today was terrible. You know, that everyone was crying. I was upset. My baby was upset. It was all really, really hard. What's this? This must be so negative for both of us. But it's actually, you know, there will be bad times where it doesn't go quite the way that we wanted it to, especially during that settling period. So I think we often expect too much of a quick result as well. These things take time, and you know, we should look on it as something that's going to evolve over the next few months rather than something that should be fixed in a week's worth of settling. But it's about creating positive patterns for the rest of your life, not the rest of next week. You know, it is a 20-year development of this relationship, so that by the time they're, you know, the age of my children, they are walking into school on their own, quite happy and content, and they might not want to go as much as staying at home, but they haven't got overt separation anxiety at that age, because they know at the end of the day they're coming back.
And really important, which we are all guilty of not considering when we're whizzing from one thing to another, most likely late to get away from nursery or to the childminder or school drop-off, is to try and give your child and this separation goodbye your full attention. Make them feel loved, like it matters, and give them affection, but then be confident in your leaving.
And I think it is often about investing the time where you really, really need to, over trying to think, oh my goodness, you know, I'm in a rush, I'm running late. Because quite often it's more time efficient to focus all your energy and attention on that snapshot of those few minutes that are needed right then, than to try and save time on the drop off and race out of the door because you're already slightly, we're always all slightly late for work. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be like that for the rest of your working life until they leave home, I think. So there's that time pressure is always going to be there. I often think, and I can't remember where I read this many, many years ago, but or somebody told me, but I think there are key pivotal points of the day where the few minutes really matter. And so the 10 minutes after your child wakes up, the 10 minutes, you know, the school run, and the time in the school run and walking them into school, the time when you've just picked them up from school and just before they go to bed. And if you can absolutely focus all of your attention on your child at that point, rather than all of the noise and the list of other things that needs to be done in your head at that time of day, it actually is worth the time investment in terms of the reduction of stress.
Also, I think just keep remembering as well that separation anxiety is probably going to be worse if your child is tired and hungry. So, you know, if we're talking about practice sessions as well, try and do them after they've had naps or after they've had meals, because it really will make a difference. They're less likely to get as upset if you've catered for those, you know, physiological needs first and foremost.
Yes, without a doubt. I mean, definitely, you know, if you've got something else playing on your mind, you know, we know trying to do anything with a tired child is a recipe for disaster, isn't it? So a tired or a hungry child, yeah, no, definitely make sure that every other need is met before you put something challenging in their path.
We as parents suffer too, and I think probably from personal experience again, maybe even more so. We always hear the stories, you know, from the childminders, etc., of they were fine as soon as you left. Honestly, they didn't cry for hardly ever. But you, as a parent, are there all day feeling so guilty and worrying about how they are and if they're okay, and wanting to phone the childminder every 2 minutes just to make sure everything's okay. So I think it's really important that when we talk about top tips for surviving separation anxiety, we actually put some in there about how to cope with them ourselves as the parent rather than just the children too.
I do actually know of one nursery that has a webcam, so you can log in to the nursery webcam where you can watch the children in their rooms. You know, only parents, it's all very kind of, you know, sort of secure. But so you can just log in when you get to work and check that your child's okay. And I imagine that actually must save them about 3 million phone calls a week.
Yeah. So although I think maybe with the type of person I am, I'd constantly want to be checking that camera and then I'd never do anything else.
I know, I think I'd have it minimized up at the top of my screen as well.
So I think when it comes to coping, remember, it's nothing you can fix. It's a totally natural part of development, and it's actually a really positive sign of attachment. Being empathetic towards your child, standing in their shoes, and recognizing that what you are all experiencing is common, and however hard, very normal, can help to make you both feel confident in going forward. Also, one of the things that really helped with me is to ask for honesty with the person looking after your child. Ask them to tell you how they have been so that you can chat through with the caregiver how, as a team, you might be able to make things easier. Remember, you don't have to cope with this on your own. You're all part of a team now helping to look after your child. So you all need to work together. Do consider who does the drop-off, because sometimes it can be easier if it's not the primary attachment figure, aka mainly the mum. If it really has to be you, work hard on your own emotions. This is something that we all struggle with, but babies and children really pick up on our own anxieties and emotions. So if we are worried about leaving our child with someone else, we need to try and calm down as much as we can so that we don't project those emotions onto our child. So maybe think about practicing some positive affirmations, some deep breathing, or a few minutes of mindfulness before you leave the house. And again, just before you get to the nursery or to the childminder or to the relative or whoever else is looking after your child. And also maybe a few deep breaths and a little bit of mindfulness or positive affirmations after you've dropped off too, just so that you don't spend the rest of the day then worrying and dealing with this horrible mum guilt that we all feel. And finally, be kind to yourself. Remember, you can't do much to speed up your baby or your child through this stage, but what you can do is change how you respond. So to respond with compassion for your child, you need to nurture yourself. So just make sure you keep telling yourself that it's a good sign if they are experiencing separation anxiety, and repeat our little Suffolk baby's mantra of "this too will pass." Thank you so much for joining us for this podcast. And as always, we look forward to chatting to you all again very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.